Jason El Pacifico. Bill Hendricks.
And the professor with your wrap-up of the National Football League for this past weekend here on the Bill Henry Show, kicking things off with energy, kicking things off with a star-studded cast of professional football players and the great teams they play for. Professor, let's give them the truth up front.
Well, we were not able to pick one game. The professor and Joe Dickhead got shut out this weekend. So that makes two consecutive weeks that we have been completely shut out.
There are a lot of ways we could go with this. We could have said that we're getting out of the business. We could have been embarrassed. We could have hung our heads and tucked our tails between our legs. Or we could celebrate the fact that we're that bad. We could celebrate the fact that we can't pick one game any better than we can pick a nostril. Now, here are the games this past weekend in the National Football League with Joe Dickhead and the Professor.
I'm Joe Dickhead. I'm the professor.
I'm Joe Dickhead, and here's the professor with the game. We're on the game. Oh, here they are. On Thursday night, it was a 17-3 win by the St. Louis Rams over the Arizona Cardinals. What a big game that was, because it looks like maybe, just maybe, and I'm not saying it will happen, but it could happen and it might happen, that the Rams are going to return to the city of Los Angeles. Now, wouldn't that be a son of a bitch? The Rams come back to L.A. and say 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, who knows when. Here's another final from the National Football League. Here's a game that we thought for sure the Eagles would win. They didn't. It was the Steelers 16, the Eagles 14. We didn't remember, and we should have remembered, that Mike Vick is the quarterback.
I don't think the professor can go, Phil.
Is he okay? You all right, Professor? Well, I mean, I can finish up for you.
Well, you know.
Yeah, you better go, Philly.
All right, I can finish the games if you want.
Just go ahead.
You don't sound too good, man.
I haven't picked a game in 2 weeks. This is great.
Yeah, he's bad, man. Anyway, the results of the National Football League. It was the Steelers 16, the Eagles 14. Let's see what else we had. Oh, tonight, well, this is not Sunday, but it's Monday. Monday Night Football, the Texans 23, the Jets 17. It was the New Orleans Saints 31, the San Diego Chargers 24. The Minnesota Vikings over the Tennessee Titans 30-7. The San Francisco 49ers beating the Buffalo Bills 45-3. It was the New England Patriots over the visiting Denver Broncos 31-21.
But you want to keep the music?
No, you don't have to keep the music. Whatever happened to him, though?
Who is that, Phil? I'm sorry, I just...
Who is what?
Well, who was the man that was screaming like... I've never heard anything like that before.
Oh, that's Joe Dickhead.
Joe... What is his name?
Joe Dickhead. He knew it football.
Joe Dickhead?
Yeah.
Well, what is the point of that? I...
Margaret, let me just... You know, that's a guy that does football scores for us, okay? Not everything around here is Hollywood and politics.
No, I understand the need to do sports. I just didn't understand the need to have a man that sounds like he's having a heart attack.
Well, Joe Dickhead, sometimes he gets screamed a lot, but he had a bad couple of weeks.
Yeah, he hasn't picked one game. He's supposed to pick the games, okay?
What do you mean, pick the games?
For gamblers. He picks the games. He says, this is who I think is going to win. He hasn't picked a game in 2 weeks. They're 0 for I don't know what. So they stink.
Why do you have this man on your program?
I don't know, Margaret. I mean, I could ask, why do I have you?
Well, that's easily... my goodness. Why do you have me? To save your show. That's why you have me.
Oh, yeah, right.
Please, I don't want to start off contentiously, but I don't think that that's a fair comment.
Well, Margaret, I mean, if you're going to ask me why do I have anybody, I have my reasons. Let's put it that way, okay?
Fair enough. Just don't start taking my good name and walking it through the gutter this early.
Not much. Anyway, welcome to the show, folks. The world-famous Phil Henry Show. Let me continue here. Sorry about Joe Dickhead's voice. Although somehow I think that was probably planned for sympathy. Anyway, the Chicago Bears over the Jaguars 41-3, the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's another team that they think might be moving out of Jacksonville to Farmers Field over here.
Yeah, well, the thing about Farmer Field.
Well, Farmers Field is this stadium in the city of Los Angeles that's going to be built. As you know, L.A. doesn't have a football franchise and has not had a professional football, an NFL franchise since the mid-90s. And there are a number of reasons for that, but the most the single most important reason is they don't have an NFL-worthy stadium.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, it means basically that the National Football League requires a certain type of stadium. You have to have a certain amount of seats. You have to have a certain amount of... I don't know if they require it so much as the economics require it.
Well, this is what I'm talking about. The taxpayers of Los Angeles are not going to stand for it. They simply will not stand for it.
Margaret, guess what? The taxpayers are not going to pay for it.
Well, who's going to... Are you telling me private money?
Yes, that's exactly who's building Farmers Field, private money. Now, that's what I heard the guy say.
What guy?
Whoever the guy is in charge of it, I don't know. But it's all going to be private dough, and that's the way it's got to be. Because L.A. is one of these towns, and there's a lot of them, where no way, no way, no way, man. No private dough, or no public dough. Ain't going to happen.
But, Bob, they have, like, a tourism tax.
Yeah, they have that in a lot of places.
No way. None of that tourism jazz. None of it, man. Forget it. Ain't going to happen. Not for a football stadium. Now, you know, in some, there are some cities where they're going to need that kind of thing. They need, I don't know how to put it, but...
Well, I understand there's some cities that want to have a football team because it affords them a level of credibility or credulity that they otherwise wouldn't have as a metropolis. Is that correct?
Well, what it is this. You know, there are some cities that, yes, that they want and need the star power of a football team. Because it's like a big billboard for your city. It can attract other businesses. It can attract commerce. It can attract, it gives the city a little bit of heat when you have that kind of action. A city like L.A. Does not need the NFL to attract heat. It's a city that was born of the you know, for the most part, of the film business, and it's just sort of been an entertainment city ever since. So it doesn't really, you know, whatever. As a result of that, the voters in the city are not going to say, well, you know, we really need an NFL team, so why don't we go out and vote, vote for a tax, because, gosh, look at the upside, blah, 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 blah. Nobody cares, you know.
Yeah, but there's jobs and everything.
Yeah, what about all the jobs?
Whatever, man. What are you talking about jobs? You know, what are you talking about, hot dog stand vendor?
Oh, yeah, what?
What jobs are you talking about, man? Other than the cats that are going to build the place, those are construction workers, and that's a very finite period of time. They're going to build it, and then it's going to be done. And then, what other jobs? Parking cars and hot dog vendor. Is that what you mean?
Well, yeah, but it's better than nothing.
But think about a guy that's been out of work, like an insurance executive or something.
An insurance executive who's been out of work and what?
He can go to the hot dog stand or something.
Yeah, that's it. Any out-of-work insurance... By the way, it's an insurance company that's building the stadium, Farmers Field. So anybody they fire or anyone they can't use, they can say, hey, Charlie, I got a great idea. How about selling hot dogs to the stadium?
Well, I don't think that's funny at all.
Oh, come on, Margaret. It is funny, and it's not going to happen. I hope.
Well, you don't know. Some of the corporate... The corporate consciousness in this country is an absolute... disgusting disaster. And look at what President Obama had to inherit. He inherited a mindset from the Bush administration that it's been something that he's had to swim upstream again. It's like a river of sewage that he's had to swim upstream against.
Well, you know, Ms. Gray, I'd love to be able to engage you on that sometime.
What, do you think you're going to debate me?
Yeah, I would.
Well, Bud's a Romney fan.
Well, isn't that nice? And to quote Al Pacino, I can't remember the last time I blew my own nose.
What's that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
I thought it was a very good line from the film.
Okay. To quote Al Pacino. Oh, I know. It's from...
Carlito's Way. God.
Yes, Carlito's Way. It's a great movie. In other games, 16-12, it was the Seahawks over the Carolina Panthers, 9-6. The Baltimore Ravens over Kansas City, a 17-13 win. The Dolphins over the Bengals. It was, and the Dolphins are 2-3. The Bengals are 3-2. I just thought I'd mention those records. The Atlanta Falcons beat the Washington Redskins 24-17. It was the Cleveland Browns losing to the New York Giants 41-27. And the Colts beat the Green Bay Packers. What happened in this game? There was some kind of a bad call, I think. I don't know what it was. But anyway, the Colts win. Andrew Luck and the Colts win 30-27 over the Green Bay Packers, and I think that's it. All right, sorry about Joe Dickhead, but maybe he'll come back and do it again, you know.
Yeah, do whatever they call that.
He can reprise it.
Yeah, he can reprise it. All right, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show on this Monday night, and we're also online at philhenryshow.com. And pretty important news on the campaign trail to talk about. Obama and Romney and 1 in 5 Americans has no religious affiliation. And where does this leave us? Where does all of this leave us? Where is this? Maybe if we started believing in God, we'd start getting things together. Or maybe we're trying something new, not believing in God. I don't know. We'll be back. It's the world famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com.
Truth is not our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show.
At one time, world famous, but hey, we'll get it back one of these days. Who knows?
Why'd you say that?
Just, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, it's like, I'll tell you this right now. I've shut the phones down on this show, and I'll tell you why we've shut the phones down. There's no point. I'm not going to worry about telephones. Telephone calls to talk shows, that's dead. That day is over. Taking calls from listeners, I know that there's all kinds of radio stations that think it's just fantastic, and they just go, oh, my goodness gracious. I couldn't be bothered. It's too much of a bother. I have been handicapped in a million different ways anyway. I got one hand tied behind my back here, so I am not even going to screw around with these phones, okay? So the Phil Henry Show officially, with the exception of the odd guest and maybe the odd call here and there, officially, we're not taking any more phone calls because, as I said, you know, there are some behind-the-scenes things here that I can't talk about, but the fact of the matter is I'm not going to show up for this radio show every night with one arm tied behind my back and look at a phone board that I'm having to screen myself while I'm trying to put a radio show on. So forget the phone calls. Anybody that needs to take phone calls anyway, that absolutely must have phone calls for their talk show to do anything. I'm not talking about succeed, but I'm just talking about for their talk show to be listenable. You got to try something else for a living, okay? I'm sick and tired of it. I'm tired of giving out a phone number. I'm tired of looking at these lines. I'm tired of them being a part of the show. I'm just sick of them. What's wrong with you?
I'm taken aback. So you're saying what?
I'm not taking phone calls, okay? This is an aspect of the talk radio experience that has been so dead for so long. I'm just not interested in it.
Well, what does that mean?
It means I'm not taking any phone calls.
You're taking, like, a guest and stuff.
Yeah, we'll have guests and all that stuff. I'm just telling you that giving out a phone number and look, folks, it's the same 2,000 people calling all the talk shows anyway. It's the same people calling all of the talk shows up and down the dial all across the country. The same monotonous people calling all the talk shows. If ever there was a talk show that was on the air that got new callers, it was mine. But like I said, I'm not walking into this studio every night with an arm tied behind my back and trying to also balance that and balance a radio show. I'm not going to do it. It's a crying shame. And I tell you what, half the time I walk in to do this radio show at night, and I wonder exactly why I'm even walking in here. It's like walking in and doing a show in front of a firing squad. It's like you've got people lined up looking and waiting and hoping you fail. In 40 years I've been in this business, man, and there's some things that never change. Some things just never change, man. And there's a certain way of doing things in the radio industry that is so pea brain and so small. After a while, you can't fight it anymore. So I'm not even, if you think I can't do 3 hours of radio without phone calls, I can do it standing on my head. I don't need it. But I'll tell you what, at the end of the day, I'm going to remember I had this experience.
That sounds pretty ominous.
Yes, I was going to say that sounds a little threatening.
No, it's not threatening. Not threatening anything.
What do you mean by that?
I'm just going to say at the end of the day, I'm going to remember this.
Yeah, and then what?
Nothing. Nothing. I'll just, I'll file it under stuff I'll never do again. I'll file it under sacks of crap that I'll never work with again. How about that? All right. 1 in 5 Americans reports no religious affiliation, study says. 1/5 of U.S. adults say they're not part of a traditional religious denomination, according to new data from the Pew Research Center. Now, is that the reason why we had that we have Obama as a president? Is that the reason why we had George Bush for 8 years as a president? What exactly is that? Is this brand new? Is this something that just took place within the last 4 years? It's evidence of an unprecedented reshuffling of American spiritual identities that is shaking up fields from charity to politics. But despite their nickname, the nuns are far from godless. Many pray, believe in God, and have regular spiritual routines. So remember what this study is saying. It says that 1 in 5 Americans have no religious affiliation.
Well, what's that mean?
It means they don't identify with a religion. It doesn't mean they don't believe in God.
Like, what religion would you call yourself, bud?
What religion?
Yeah.
The Jesus Christ.
You're the Jesus Christ religion?
Yeah.
The Jesus Christ religion. In other words, you're a Christian.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, that's fine, but do you have a denomination?
Is that money?
No, you idiot. Denominationally?
Denomination.
A denomination is the name of the religion. Like, are you Lutheran?
No, I ain't Lutheran.
Well, what were you?
We went to the Jesus Christ Church.
What Jesus Christ Church? Was there a Jesus? Did it have a name on the front?
Yeah.
What did it say?
It said the church. It said Fifth Street Church.
Fifth Street Church. So what was that? Like Baptist?
Yeah, Baptist.
Where was it?
It was in California.
A Baptist church? Well, there's Baptist church in California.
There's also a Foursquare Gospel Church out where you grew up.
In Arcadia, yeah. All right, so you grew up Baptist, bud. That's the denomination.
Oh.
And Robert, what about you?
Well, we were Episcopalian.
Episcopalian, and I was Catholic. And Margaret, what about you?
We were Protestant. I don't know if it's probably Methodist. I'm not sure. My father was Unitarian. Frank, of course, is Jewish. We have raised Jason J. Delmonico in a very non-denominational, non-theistic theism. And
all right, well, what is that?
Well, Phil, don't get all, well, what is it? You know, just listen to me, all right?
Fine, but I got a feeling we're getting into some kind of...
We're getting into some kind of what?
Some heavy-ass New Age, you know?
No, it's not heavy-ass New Age anything. We've raised Jason J. Delmonico as a theistic. So he is theistic.
He's atheistic.
No, I didn't say atheist. I said theistic. Theistic.
What's that?
That is, you believe in God, but Margaret has yet to tell us, you know, in what form.
Well, what do you mean, what form?
Well, theistic means he believes in God.
We have, yes, but we've taught him a non-theism theism.
What does that mean? A non-theism? Does he believe in God or not?
He believes in God, but not so as you'd notice. That's the way Frank puts it.
He believes in God, but not so as you'd notice. That's the way Frank puts it.
Yes. Phil? All right,
fine. All right, so that's really what you're talking about there, though. That's exactly what's going on, man. That's exactly what's going on.
Yeah, I got an idea. Let's call up, like, Father McQuarrie or something.
But don't call up Dan Castellini or something.
Hey, call up Castellini. Call up Dave Castellini. You got his number?
Where's he?
He's in Phoenix. He's the minister there, the youth minister. We can call up Dave Castellini and get his take on this newfangled sort of non-denominational religion. And it's not anything that's surprising. It sort of comes of the post, I suppose, post-World War II rethinking of values, rethinking America's place in not only in the world but in the universe, and
America's place in the universe.
Well, you know, and all of those things that, you know, the just that, like they were saying, the shifting of values. These the numbers have increased dramatically over the past 2 decades, according to the study released on Tuesday. About 19.6% of Americans say they are nothing in particular, agnostic or atheistic, up from about 8% in 1990. 1/3 of adults under 30 say the same. Pew offered people a list of more than a dozen possible affiliations, Protestant, Catholic, something else and nothing in particular, and something else and nothing in particular won.
No, we got them all won. I got Dave Castorini. Hey, Reverend Castorini.
All right, hold on, bud. We'll have Reverend Castorini with us here in just a moment on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show as we get to the bottom of the non-denominational atheistic or non-theism theism. See what I think? Okay.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying? I see what you're saying.
All right, relax.
What? Why are you lisping?
We're fooling around. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show. You see that?
See what?
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with me is Reverend Dave Castorini of the Youth Ministry in Phoenix, Arizona, and Reverend Castorini joining us on very short notice. But, you know, Reverend Dave, we are talking about this study that says most Americans report no, one in five, I should say most, that's one in five, that's 20% of all Americans report no religious affiliation. Now, I know you're having a carnival tonight, correct?
We are, Phil. Thank you for inviting me in your program, but we are, yeah. And this is to benefit our scholarship fund, and we invite the parents of all of our kids. We do, of course, have quite a few adults in our congregation, but for those parents and our members of our congregation, because it is a youth ministry, so primarily, Phil, we have young people who are a part of our Sunday and Wednesday night services. But tonight we're having our fiesta, and as I said, we're going to be raising money for our scholarship fund.
That's great, and I wish you all the success in the world.
Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome. And Margaret is here.
Yes, Reverend Castorini, how are you, sir?
Margaret, I'm very good. How are you?
I'm good. Phil and I and Dick or
Bud.
Bud and Robert.
Yeah, Bud Dickman. How are you doing, Bud?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, Reverend. I was the one that called you.
Okay, you were the one that just called me right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we were talking, and I wanted to get your take on something. We're talking, of course, about the one in five Americans that do. Would you please not have him do that?
Bud, don't put your fingers in your nose.
But I do.
Just like that. But don't.
It's very distracting to me. It's very distracting to me. You understand, Bud?
I don't know. I'm not saying anything. I'm just trying to get...
See what he's doing?
Bud, don't... It's upsetting to people when you do that, okay?
What?
You just take my word for it.
Hey, Bud, this is Reverend Castorini.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, just, you know, Bud, if you need to do that, you go in the bathroom and get yourself a tissue or something.
Yes, sir, okay.
There you go. Thank you, Reverend.
That's all right. I think very highly of Bud. I think he's a good young man.
Well, maybe you can do something with him, Reverend, and teach a little manners to him, because I think he's sometimes way overboard.
Well, you know what? Jesus said, wherever the least of these are, you know, I am...
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. I wanted to ask you...
Wherever the least of you are... I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
It seems wherever the least of you are, you and Phil and Robert, wherever the least of you, that the least of you is Bud.
I wouldn't want to say anything.
No, I think that's pretty accurate. If you want to say who's the least one, Bud is.
What did I do?
Nothing, man. You got to go in the bathroom and do that.
You don't put the tissue up your nose. Oh, God.
Lord.
That was a great impression of John Huston in Chinatown. Was that Margaret?
Yes, it was. Margaret,
what?
That sounded like John Huston in Chinatown.
What did?
You going, Lord.
Yeah, there's... In fact, I do a pretty good one. Here it is. This is John Huston in Chinatown. Margaret, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Here it is. Lord! Oh, Lord! Do you hear that one?
Yes, it's a very disturbing part of the film, because John Huston plays a man who has raped his daughter, played by Faye Dunaway. She's given birth to a child that is both her daughter and her sister. And, oh, God.
Well, now that you put it that way.
I understand, and I'm not trying to turn this into the Jerry Sandusky Variety Hour.
That's pretty funny, man. Hey, Bud.
Yeah?
They call it Jerry Sandusky Variety Hour.
That's pretty good.
You get the tissue out of your nose.
Oh, God.
I'm awfully sorry. I didn't mean to.
That's okay, Reverend. All right, now look.
You know, I really don't find anything. We're not doing John Houston impressions here, please.
I'm sorry, Margaret. That was uncalled for. Phil mentioned John Houston in Chinatown. It is one of my favorite movies.
It is, huh? I mean, and I say that. I mean, there's so many dark themes in that film.
Well, there are a lot of dark themes, Phil. Christians should not shy away from looking at art, even when it reflects those darker, those shadows, those areas that lack light in the human spirit and human nature. I think art needs to represent the human condition, and we learn from that, and we see those places. And as a Christian and as a Christian minister and one who strives to bring people closer to the Word of Jesus Christ, I need to see represented in all of its forms human expression. So, yes, absolutely. I think the film Chinatown, in some areas, it may celebrate darker instincts.
What do you think the film, what are the dark instincts it celebrates?
Well, maybe celebrate's not a good word, but I think it does celebrate a level of violence. I think it also seems to, it also expressed that in that film it expressed that sex or love can be used to manipulate or to gain, and I think that that's wrong.
Where did you see that? Is
in Jake, in the character of Jake Gittes, who sleeps with his client, Faye Dunaway, in order that he can gain, I think, more access to...
You don't think he was in love with her?
I think that was the point of the movie, that he does fall in love with her, just as he did another woman.
That's why they say it's Chinatown, Jake. It's Chinatown.
Yeah, but that would have meant, I think, most likely he fell in love with a Chinese woman. And how likely is it in those days that there was a wealthy Chinese woman, who lived in San Marino? I don't think so.
But it didn't have to be a wealthy Chinese. Why do you say it has to be a Chinese woman?
Because he worked in Chinatown.
Well, in any event.
This doesn't really have anything to do with it, but I wanted to ask you a question more to the point. Phil and I were talking here...
You don't agree that he fell in love with a Chinese woman?
I don't know that he fell in love with a Chinese woman. You're talking about Jack Nicholson in Chinatown.
Well, I'm talking about his character.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea. I do know that the film keeps referencing something that happened in his past, and that he's about to go down the same road, and he's about to make the same mistake. You know, his friend, the police lieutenant, says, "You never learn, Jake." You know that line.
That's right.
And then I think, at the very end, his partner says to him, "Come on, Jake, it's Chinatown."
And there's also a scene with John Huston who says, "Did you ever work with the lieutenant guy in Chinatown, and did as little as possible?" And all of that bespeaks that Chinatown somehow represents heartbreak for Jake Gittes, you see. And so he felt that going steady or going out with or going with an Anglo or a white woman, I don't know, probably meant that, he wouldn't get in as much trouble. And then they tell him, look, well, you're still in Chinatown, you know.
So, well, I didn't see that at all. I didn't read that. I didn't see a racial component in that at all.
Well, the whole movie's called Chinatown.
Can we move past this, please? Because I really...
Yeah, let's get on to something else here.
Well, I know it's uncomfortable.
No, it's not uncomfortable so much as it seems bizarre. I mean, whatever. I don't want to talk about Chinatown. Margaret, go ahead.
Reverend Castorini, I'm hearing... What is that in the background?
We're having our carnival tonight. We're raising money for our scholarship fund.
Oh. Phil and I were talking about the Great Awakening here in the United States back in the early part of the 19th century. And we were talking about the number of different Christian cults, or not cults, but different Christian sects that sprung up during that period of time, that actually sort of put a lot of people off from Christianity, I think, Reverend Castorini, and had a lot of people opting for the Transcendentalists, for instance, as well as these other non-traditional, non-Christian groups. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, Margaret, there were an awful lot of Christian groups and sects that did travel across the country and were featured speakers and had 10 shows and all of the things we're familiar with here in the 20th century. That did happen in the early 19th century in America. One of them, a group whose name escapes me, would go from town to town wearing nothing but animal skins in an act of extreme poverty, in an act of extreme humility. Before the eyes of God, and I've always been very fascinated by those groups. I don't agree that they turn people off of Christianity,
Well, they sort of did, because as Margaret pointed out, the transcendentalists and some of the others that were non-traditional religious or philosophical societies, a lot of people opted for those because the numbers of these Christian sects were springing up everywhere.
Well, to that end, if they had come through David Castorini's town and I was a man living in those times and I had all my big boots and I was going out and I was turning dirt clods or I was selling dirt clods, I think in those days people used to sell dirt clods. That's how poor you could be.
And, excuse me, what were they selling?
Well, back in those days, people used to sell dirt clods or mud pies. That's how children today make mud pies, because you'd actually get down there and make a mud pie and sell it.
For what?
For money.
No, I mean, what are you selling a mud pie or what are you selling dirt clods for?
That's how poor people were, Phil.
Yes, but I think what Phil's asking is, what possible need would anyone have for a dirt clod?
I don't know, but that was all there was to sell, is what my point is. And so people would stand out on the side of roads selling dirt clods and rocks.
Selling dirt clods and rocks.
That's how poor things were.
Well, we're talking about the Jackson era, when things were not so much poor as things were really in flux.
Well, I don't know, Phil, but I could well imagine myself out on the side of the road selling my dirt clods or my rocks or however a man got along in those days. And into town comes these people wearing their animal skins, and...
I'm sure people saw dirt clods.
Shut up, man.
Sorry.
Bud.
But in any event, coming through the town would be these people in animal skins. And I got to tell you, if Dave Castorini saw that, I'd say, honey, let's sell the rest of these dirt clods, and let's get what we can get for these rocks and for those weeds that we just pulled. And
boy, you know, you've got me really thinking. Weeds and dirt clods.
That's right. That's what people sold.
Well, do you have any anecdotal evidence of this, or is there anything in the literature, you know, Reverend Castorini?
Margaret, I don't know. All I know is the stories and the history I've read is that they would sell dirt clods, weeds, anything, bugs, dead bugs. They would sell a bag of dead bugs.
For what?
Well, maybe they could feed them to the fish, or...
Yeah, they probably had a pot of fish or something.
I don't know. But I would, Dave Castorini, I would leap at the chance of putting on an animal skin. I would think that going from town to town wearing a bear skin with nothing else on, just the sheer humility of that, it would remind me of who I am truly beholden to. And shuffling from town to town, I know this is going to sound strange, but having sores on my legs, sores and matted, filthy hair, and an animal skin that probably still stunk of the animal itself, probably even with some of the flesh or tissue of the animal hanging off of it. And
okay, all right.
I'm sorry. That got kind of graphic, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Excuse me.
Margaret, are you okay?
No.
Is Margaret all right?
No, she isn't. Bud, go and see.
Yeah, Miss Gray, you all right?
No.
She's not well.
She's not what? She's not healthy?
Well, yeah, she's not healthy.
Go.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, Phil.
That's all right. She's got a queasy stomach. Let's take a break here. We are on with Reverend Dave Castorini from the Castorini Youth Ministry as we talk with him about 1 in 5 Americans do not profess any religious affiliation. 1 in 5 Americans, and we're talking about a wide range of things. Christianity today, Christianity in the 19th century, other religious sects, and Reverend Castorini's idea that dirt farmers in the 19th century had to sell dirt clods, weeds, and bags of dead bugs. I don't know.
No, that's how poor they were.
That's how poor they were. All right, we'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show. Margaret, you
Truth
all right?
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Back here, the Phil Hendry Show. Next hour, we're going to talk about Jerry Sandusky. He says he's innocent of sexual abuse charges. He blames a conspiracy. The former Penn State University assistant football coach is scheduled to be sentenced. I thought that was, yes, it's tomorrow. It's tomorrow. He will be sentenced on Tuesday. Today is the 8th, and this is a story that moved on the Philadelphia Inquirer feed for the 9th.
God. I think that man is absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, he's a creep.
I don't think you're going to get any disagreement from anybody on that. But I always think to myself, I always try to, you know, I'm just this kind of think, okay, am I missing anything here? You know, as I draw my conclusions and as I state my opinions, you know, am I missing something? Is there, you know, innocent people have been convicted before.
Well, you don't think this man is innocent, do you? My God, Phil, have you read the charges?
Yes, of course I have, and I've read the all of the coverage, and let me tell you, the guys right now that have had a really hard time defending themselves. If you think Sandusky's has had a hard time, I mean, he's, you know, guilty, dead to rights. But those other guys, that Graham Spanier, I've been reading his jazz. But we'll get into it when we come back after the news. On the line with us is David Castorini.
Bill, can I comment on that?
Reverend, yes, go ahead.
I agree with you, Bill. You know, let's make sure that we've dotted our I's and crossed our T's on this. You don't want this to be. I've read where one of the defense attorneys put forward the idea that this man Sandusky might have been just soaping them down. You know, teaching them how to proper hygiene, that kind of thing.
Well, that sounds a little.
I know it sounds kind of kooky.
Kooky? That is offensive. Even if that's what he was doing.
You mean you're telling me that I read where the defense attorney said that? I mean, he couldn't possibly believe that.
I don't know.
Do you?
No, I don't believe it. But I do know that in our ministry, as you know, Phil, there's the second mile. We go the extra mile when it comes to bringing the word. And I've always believed that if that means that I have to send, and God forgive me for this, but if I've got to send a woman to your house to get you to pay attention, all right, okay, you win. You're right, she's left, I'm gone. You know that old country western song?
I know the song, yeah.
Yeah, what about it?
You're right, she's left, you're right, she's left, I'm gone. Right?
What about it?
Well, I'm just saying, you're right, she's left, I'm gone.
What's that got to do with this guy Sandusky soaping people up?
No, I was talking about how if all it takes, Phil, is for me to send a woman to your house, all right, with her high heels in her hands and a bottle of champagne.
So I haven't heard this. Are you saying you send a prostitute to people's homes to convert them?
No, I'm not, man. No, I'm not. A prostitute means she's been paid, she's a call girl, and she goes. And there's a pimp and all of that.
Well, what do you call what you do, Reverend Castorini?
Well, Phil, help me out here.
Well, I mean, you've talked about this before. I'm not sure I understand it.
Well, help me out, will you?
Help you out how?
I've been on your program talking about this.
I can help you out, Reverend Castorini. It's okay.
Well, bud, if you understand it.
Well, I don't think you're going to want him doing that, Reverend Castorini.
No, bud, if you understand it, I'd like it. I went into my office here because it's getting too noisy outside. If you understand it, bud, and you can you close that door, please? Close that door, will you, Amanda? Thank you. But if you understand that, you go ahead.
Yeah. See what Reverend Castorini is. If you want to go to God, but you're not sure, but a girl comes over and will do a oral, you know.
Yeah, you talk about she has a sex act. Well, you don't believe in God?
Yeah, but not the same way. You know what we're talking about is if she comes, if Reverend Castorini...
Oh, hold on, bud. You got to close that door. Hey, I'm talking on the radio. I'm talking on the Phil Henry Show. On the Phil Henry Show. Turn the whole carnival off. Turn the carnival down. Thank you. Go ahead, bud. I think you're doing well.
Yeah, so...
I don't think he's doing well. I think he's carving up whatever message you've been trying to send. Bud Dickman is sitting here carving it like a Christmas turkey.
No, I'm not. Yeah.
Margaret, I think you need to understand...
By the way, where's your office? Is it in some lead-lined vault? Because for a minute there, I could hear the carnival. As soon as you shut the door, well, now I can hear the carnival.
Yeah, hold on for a minute. Amber, shut the door, will you? I don't want any more. No, I don't want any more of that. Huh? I don't want any Italian ice. I don't like the name of that anyway. It doesn't sound... Yeah, all right. Go ahead, bud.
Go ahead, bud. You're talking to me.
Yeah, but saying that you can have sex with a girl if that takes you to Jesus.
That's all we're saying, Phil.
But no, and I was asking you, is your office in a lead-lined vault?
Yes, it is, all right? It is. It's in a lead-lined vault because we are afraid of the possibility of an Armageddon and the possibility of... We've always been an end-times an end times group, an end times sect, Phil. We believe in that.
Well, so, in other words, Reverend Castorini, you have an end times belief. You are in a lead-lined vault. You believe that sending a prostitute to a man's home...
No, ma'am, I didn't say prostitute.
All right. Sending a woman to a man's home will convert him to Christianity, and it's worth it. You'd like to walk from town to town wearing an animal skin and caked in mud with running sores on your legs.
That about sums up Dave Castorini, yeah. And I can't deny it. And I'm all... What? All right, I'm going to leave the door open because it's getting hot in here. As they said when they walked in, it smells a little bit, and I tend to perspire. I've got a difficult time. I can't use antiperspirant, Phil. And so as a result, I only use deodorant. And my body chemistry, when it mixes with the deodorant I use, which is a menin, it tends to smell like it smells like a toilet or something that's like dog dropping or something like that.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah, so it's starting to stink like a dog kennel in here.
And that's because of you?
Who said that?
This is Margaret. That's because of you?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, because of my body chemistry. When I perspire, it intermixes with the menin deodorant, and it smells like a dog kennel. That's what I've been told it's most closely associated with.
Reverend Castorini, I hope you're for you.
Phil, he's got his fingers in his nose.
Did a great job.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We're online at philhenryshow.com as well every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And we do thank you for joining us, sort of getting into our weekly routine. Great news, the free Phil Henry podcast returns tomorrow with episode 47. Margaret, you are featured on episode 47.
Well, and I am, Phil, and I think it's a good episode. I want everyone to know this is an interview that Phil did with me back in 2004. It was during Ronald Reagan's funereal procession, or it was the funereal part of the funereal.
The funeral?
Well, no, because it was the funereal. Do you know what I mean by funereal?
No, I don't, Margaret. Are we going to get...
No, hold on for a minute, Phil. Let me explain.
Yo, you're talking about quit using big words and everything.
Oh, excuse me. Am I using big words? Oh, boy.
Well, Margaret, you know, what are you saying?
I'm saying... Forget it.
Come on. Don't do that.
No, no. Forget it. I don't want to be a bother.
Well, Margaret, hold on. Now y'all said that.
What?
I said you set it up and tell you.
Yeah, why don't you say what you're going to say instead of telling everybody no?
Because I don't want to be sitting here on the hot seat while Phil bores two holes through me going, come on, man, you come on.
Well, what are you talking about? You said funereal.
Yes.
Okay. I'll tell the audience.
No, I'll do it.
No, I'll do it.
No, I'll do it. It was the funereal part of the Reagan funeral procession. I said funereal because funereal gives you an overview. It is the overall. You see, you're missing the overall. Like Hal Holbrook said in...
Of Mice and Men.
No, not Of Mice and Men. What a jack.
All the President's Men.
Yes, you're missing the overall. So it was the funereal.
Good. So in other words, you were out there at the Reagan Library as the services for the late president were being held, and you were giving away John Kerry literature during the election season of 2004, dressed in a Ronald Reagan mask.
Now, did you see how you just did that? So you're out of... And it was so boring.
No, I remember that one now.
Yes, no, and people got very upset with you.
Well, you know something? In retrospect, I think people are going to agree with me. And I'm sorry you had to describe it because you go, you're out of the Reagan and the... If that was a song, Phil, I'd be all in. Number one on the hit parade. But as it was a recitation of something that I did. Me, my life. I feel a little violated, okay?
Oh.
Well, no, Phil,
You really get dramatic, I'll tell you that.
Oh, okay, the woman's being dramatic. Well, I'm so sorry to be dramatic, Phil.
Margaret, you know, I don't know where to begin with you. You are so cynical, you're so snide, you're so insulting sometimes. Every little thing has to be right with you, or you're off to the races with how hurt you are.
Well, what do you expect me to say?
Well, all I asked you was, what did you mean by funereal? That's all.
You know full well what that word means.
I understand that, but my audience...
Oh, God, the audience.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people are there, not just you.
That's right, Bud's right. You know, it's not just you, me, Bud, and Robert, it's the audience, too. They're like the fifth man, you know.
It's, what is that, like the sixth man in hockey?
No, in basketball.
In basketball, yeah.
No, I wouldn't call it that. No, the sixth man in our case is our audience. It's the people that are listening and waiting for you to funereal. All right. So in any event, let's not stick to that because we got to move on. That's part of our episode 47 of the Free Phil Henry podcast. And by the way, you can get a backstage pass at philhenryshow.com, so you can hear the entire shows that these podcasts are pulled from. In our archives, as well as watch our nightly video cast, as well as listen to the Milwaukee Lion podcast. The Milwaukee Lion podcast, by the way, there's going to be a free Milwaukee highlight podcast that will be starting this week, in addition to the free Phil Henry podcast. So we got a lot of stuff going on. And, of course, we have the Milwaukee Lions on demand. They played today in Portland, and you'll be able to download that game tomorrow with Jack Igagner and Brett Morrison.
Who won?
Well, I don't want to tell you who won. It's going to be posted on the site, but I don't want to tell you. Because people get upset.
Who does?
The people that download the podcast, the podcast.
See, I don't understand. Is it a podcast or a broadcast? You know, these things.
It's a podcast, meaning it is delivered to one's iPod or listening pod. Now, people get upset if we announce the result of the game because it's a spoiler, you know.
My God, it's just some silly...
Yeah, I know. It's a silly sporting event, but that's how guys are. All right, 877-876-7445. We're going to have Coach Vernon Dozier on with us here in a moment to talk about Jerry Sandusky. But here's the story as it is coming down to us. And, of course, tomorrow's the day. I say tomorrow, today, depending upon where you're listening to us. Back east, you guys are already well into Tuesday. And on the 9th, Tuesday, Jerry Sandusky... will be sentenced on 45 counts of child sexual abuse.
Why didn't they do it already?
I don't know. As you know, the verdict was rendered in June, and the judge deferred the sentencing to this month. He has been in jail ever since, and I imagine that the judge has wanted to consult a variety of legal sources and perhaps... maybe consult with whoever a judge consults with in terms of the sentencing. Perhaps it's something that is unprecedented in his experience. Perhaps it is something unprecedented in some way, shape, or form. But defiant, and here is the story from the Philadelphia Inquirer.
I just want to say that was my father's favorite paper. You know, I grew up in Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
and that was my father's religiously, every day he read the Philadelphia Inquirer, Daddy, can I get you coffee? We always used to, because he had four daughters, and we were always vying for his attention.
Boy, how weird is that?
I beg your pardon?
Well.
Oh, you better.
Margaret, don't curl your fist.
What's he mean by that?
Well, I mean, you're the one that said when your dad came home, y'all would go get lipstick on.
We got ourselves made up for our father when he came home. There were four girls and my mother, and we loved my father very much.
Of course you did.
Well, I don't know what this one's referring to.
Bud, if I hear you...
No, she's the one that said.
A lot of girls, you know, I mean, it's a very old tradition, isn't it?
It's one that the Italian tradition is very fond of, where when father comes home, the girls line up on the staircase.
Then he goes, eeny, meeny, miny, moe.
You shut up.
That's what it...
Hey.
I'll kick his ass.
She put her hands on me.
You deserve it, man. Margaret, God, you're just like Robert.
I'm going to tell you right now, Phil, I mean, the light is green.
Well, I said what?
I know what you said. He goes, eeny, meeny, miny, moe.
What are you laughing at?
Nothing. I swear to God, nothing. I swear.
You better hope, Phil.
All right, let's just... Calm down here. All right, so let me get back to the Jerry Sandusky. And so your dad liked to read the Philadelphia Inquirer. God bless him. and God rest his soul.
Thank you.
All right. Defiant and unrepentant, Jerry Sandusky accused his victims of, what do you want?
He's doing it again.
Bud, get your hands out of your nose, will you?
Don't hit my hand in my nose, hit my finger.
Out of there.
I'm sorry.
Go into the bathroom, get a tissue, and blow your freaking nose.
No, man, don't. Can't put your hand up there.
I didn't have my hand in there.
It looked like you had your hand up there.
That is vile beyond all words.
All right. Defiant and unrepentant, Jerry Sandusky accused his victims. Get a load of this guy. Accused his victims of lodging false allegations against him in a taped jailhouse statement aired by a radio station late Monday, one day before he was to be sentenced on 45 counts of child sexual abuse. The former Penn State University assistant football coach blamed his conviction on a conspiracy by aggressive investigators, lying accusers, and the media. Well, there's a surprise. His three-minute statement was aired by Penn State's student-run radio station and posted on the station's website. They can take away my life, they can make me out as a monster, they can treat me as a monster, but they can't take away my heart. In my heart, I know I did not do these alleged disgusting acts. Sandusky, 68, awaits sentencing in the Center County Jail, where he is in protective custody. His attorneys Joe Amendola and Carl Rominger confirmed to the Center Daily Times that the statement was Sandusky's, but Amendola said they didn't know how the radio station obtained it. The statement coincided with signals from Sandusky's defense team that it had abandoned plans to plead for leniency and had shifted focus to appealing his June conviction. The bottom line is this, Amendola said, emerging Monday from a conference with Judge John M. Cleland. How can he be remorseful if he maintains his innocence?
This is vile. This is an obscenity. Don't read any more of it.
I am going to read it.
I wish you wouldn't.
Why?
It's an obscenity, Phil.
It's news, you know. Let's just hold on. Don't read any more of it.
You're offending me with every word.
Gotta read it.
Go ahead.
Well, thank you. The bottom line is, as Amendola said, how can he be remorseful if he maintains his innocence? Under state sentencing guidelines, Cleland could impose anywhere from 10 years to more than 400 years.
Then he could do 400 years? Guy, he could live that long.
Well, they do 400 years anyway. They do. In our jurisprudence, in our legal system, If that's the penalty for what you've done, then that's the penalty for what you've done. You know, you ain't going to live 400 years, but your ass, that pretty much means you're never getting out, you know?
Yeah, well, I don't mean it that, because if they have parole.
Well, parole is the least the state can do for someone who's incarcerated.
What about Sandusky?
I hate him.
Yeah, okay. We'll be right back.
What does that mean?
Well, this is kind of, you know, I noticed this with a lot of people. They're sort of liberal when it comes to prisoners' rights and this and that. But then on the other side of it, Sandusky and guys like that. And these animals that commit these acts that are so beyond the pale. I don't know how anybody could be talking about prisoners' rights for some of these guys when you think of the stuff they've done. We'll be right back to world-famous Phil Henry Show. We have Vernon Dozier coming back, high school football coach at Belmar Academy, to comment on this.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Hold your fingers out of your nose, man.
I know.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. On the line with me is Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy, himself a football coach and a teacher of young athletes and young people. And tomorrow, Vernon, it's going to be Jerry Sandusky standing in front of a judge. And what do you think?
Well, as a football coach, it's particularly a painful thing to witness because, our profession, and even though I'm at the high school level, I've coached at the college level, I've coached at the professional level, and at the end of the day, it's just, you're talking about the same thing. You're talking about being a teacher. You're talking about somebody who's, that you have the trust of parents, you have the trust of the athlete, and you have you have an obligation, obviously, to do everything in your power to protect as well as to teach.
To protect and serve.
What's that? What did you say?
What did you say, bud?
To protect and serve, right?
Protect and serve. Well, no, protect and serve is what police officers do. I guess you could say that, yeah.
Yeah, bud, we're talking about coaching football, okay? Go ahead, Vernon.
Yeah, hey, so anyway.
Well, okay.
Just don't interrupt, okay?
I thought that's what it was.
No, protect and serve is what police officers do. That's got nothing to do with what I do. I mean, I do want to protect. I do want to serve, but I want to do a lot more. I want to teach. Jerry Sandusky is Jerry Sandusky, but the guy that that disappoints all of us, the guy that has, in many respects, lucked out, I hate to say it, is Joe Paterno.
Why do you say Joe Paterno?
Why, Vernon, this is Margaret. Why did you say that?
Well, Margaret, let me, before you start, because I know how you can get.
How do I get?
Hold on. Let me just say.
Let the man finish.
Let me say. What I mean by that is this. Joe Paterno is an individual who has, as Shakespeare said, he has shuffled off this mortal coil, and he is letting Jerry Sandusky sweep up behind the elephant here.
You're not saying that Joe Paterno was engaged in this kind of activity.
No. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is, Paterno is the guy that I think should be standing tall before the man and answering questions as to why this kind of thing was tolerated, why he didn't immediately go to. If it was me, and someone came to me and said that there was a sexual assault taking place in a bathroom on campus or in the shower on campus, I can tell you, Mr. Hendry, I don't care if I was in bed in my pajamas, as however long it took me to put my slippers on and my robe on and get the car keys, I would be down at any police station you care to talk about. I wouldn't just be calling them up. I would be driving there, walking into that place in my bathrobe and my pajamas, sitting down and demanding to see the chief of police. But I didn't hear Paterno do any of that. All Paterno did was in that fumbling way that an 80-year, I mean, the man's in his 80s, so what do you think it sounded like, Phil?
Well, what are you asking me?
Well, what do you think it sounded like when somebody came to him, when this query come to him, or McQuarrie?
The boy's name is McQuarrie, the young man.
Yeah, McQuarrie. When he comes to, and think about that, he's got to go through life with that name. I mean, everything about this story is sad, from McQuarrie going through life with a name like that,
Well, I don't think that's got anything to do with this story.
No, I know it does. I'm just saying everything about the case is got a bad stink to it or a bad look. It just looks bad. But the point is here, I would be down there and...
Well, hold on for a minute here before you go any further. Joe Paterno was not charged with any crime. He didn't commit any crime.
That's not exactly... I mean, what Vernon is saying is that Joe Paterno should have reported it.
Well, he did in his mind.
Hold on for a minute, Phil. No, he didn't. He went to these two guys. He didn't go to the police. The police. You know what the police is. Yeah, you've heard of them.
Of course.
Okay, that's what you do. You go to the police. You don't stand there, all 86 years old of you, and look befuddled with your hands in your pocket, fumbling with your car keys or your rabbit's foot or whatever it is you go to when you're feeling nervous or... You know, and I'm sorry to say, but I mean, did he have a joy hole? I don't know what
What do you mean a joy hole?
I don't know what that old man, what kept him preoccupied that he didn't go to the police, P-O-L-I-C-E, the police. You can look him up in the Yellow Pages. You can see him on Wikipedia. You can.
No, everyone knows what the police is.
Good. Then why didn't Paterno?
Well, I think that Paterno, and so many people have commented on this, Paterno is an old school...
Wait, who is Paterno?
Joe Paterno, pronunciation, according to Margaret.
It's the what?
That. May I finish, please?
Yes, I just wondered, what is Paterno?
May I finish?
Go ahead.
As I was saying, could you turn that television down?
Amber, honey, turn that down, please. Go ahead.
Thank you. Joe Paterno, or if you will, Paterno, is a man who belongs, or was a man who belonged to a different era. Perdoneau was, if you will, the early 20th century version of the football coach. Now, in a very, very interesting book called The Light at the End of the Tunnel, Dr.
Can I just butt in here for a minute? I don't want to listen to a dissertation. We're talking about something that's happening right now.
I agree with Vernon, Margaret. But just your point is what?
My point about Paterno.
Could we call him Joe Paterno, please?
I'm very confused.
All right. My point is this. That as much as I don't appreciate the big football mentality on campuses, you can't be suggesting that Joe, if you will, Paterno, was responsible or could have acted any quicker.
That's exactly what I'm suggesting. I'm saying that Paterno is the one guy that got away with bloody murder in this entire affair.
Well, when you say bloody murder, I think it's a little rough. I mean, let's say... I will say this. He's a man that did not aggressively pursue a serious, serious action that took place on campus in his department.
Yeah, and people forgive him. Why do they forgive him? Because he's 86. Well, let me tell you something. Or he was. I don't forgive him because he's 86. I blame him because he's 86. I blame him because he's 86. I'm saying this guy should have known better, but then, even though he knew better, you reach an age where you're approaching some sort of a dementia, so you know better, but what you know, everything that you know and everything that you've built up in your life to that point of 86 is now disintegrating because your mind is going. So here's what we have. We've got Jerry Sandusky. We have McQuarrie coming and telling Paterno. We've got Paterno knowing what the right thing is to do, but the dementia has suddenly collapsed his mind. That's what you got right there.
So is it his fault or not?
Yes, it was his fault. He should have acted. He should have known that he was demented.
All right, hold on. 877-876-7445. Joe Paterno is the real culprit in this, and he's now gone. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
You understand what I'm saying, right?
No, I don't.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Back here with Vernon Dozier, we talk about Jerry Sandusky, who is going to be sentenced today. Vernon Dozier, a head football coach at Belmar Academy. You've made the statement, it's not unheard of, people have said this before, Joe Paterno is the guy that ought to be on standing tall before the man right next to Sandusky. He was not accused of any of these heinous acts. What Joe Paterno is accused of is not acting, and that's bad. There's no question.
Well, yeah, of course it's bad. You know, people will say it's bad, but then they say, well, it ain't that bad. You know, I mean, that's what I get from a lot of people, Phil, and say, well, that's terrible. He didn't protect the kids. But when it comes down to it, people say, yeah, but at least he wasn't Sandusky, you know.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I was reading about...
Let me finish before you tell me what you were reading, okay? Because I want to get this off my chest, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
You know, now, here you have... Now, I'm a coach, and I had my chances. Would I have liked to have coached at Penn State? Yeah. Would I have liked to have been the head coach at Penn State? Sure. Would I have liked to have been a defensive coordinator, a linebacker coach, or whatever this guy Sandusky supposedly did? Sure. But I didn't get that chance. Instead, a pervert got that chance. A pervert and an old man whose mind collapsed. They are the two that got the chance. So, you know.
So what is your point?
My point is, I can restate my case.
Well, your case is what? You're saying that had you gotten the chance, you would have dealt with it better.
You wouldn't. Well, I should hope you would have dealt with it better.
Well, no, there's more than that to just me dealing with it better. What I'm saying is, while I'm at the high school level, meeting with parents and going to coffees and accordion recitals, I went to an accordion recital last night, Phil. I'm not. That's nothing that I. That's terrible. That's not an onerous thing. That's not torture. But. How many accordion recitals did Joe Paterno go to? Don't answer that. None. How many accordion recitals did Jerry Sandusky go to? Don't answer that. None. How many accordion recitals did Graham Spanier go to?
Hold on. I happen to know the answer to that. Graham Spanier went to several accordion recitals because he was the college president. And I know because my sister teaches accordion and was in College Station with two of her pupils at a recital they gave, I think at one of the auditoriums on the Penn State campus, and Graham Spanier was in attendance. So how's that? What do you think about that, huh? Oh, come on.
No, it's... Vernon, what do you think?
What do I think? Here you go, Margaret. You listening?
Yes.
Hey. How do you feel about that? Okay.
All right. Well, don't be a smartass.
I'm not being a smartass, but the point that I'm making is I went to an accordion recital. Now, I'm a very good football coach, but I'm not coaching at Penn State. Would I like to coach at Penn State? Yes, I would. And
why are you not coaching at the college level?
I'm coaching at the high school level, Phil, because I see a need for good, quality football coaches. I see a need for a top-of-the-line football coach at the high school level that can take it to the next level, that can take the high school level to the next level. That's always been something that I told the people here at Belmar. I wanted to take high school football and kick it up a notch so that it's competitive with certain levels of college football. I'd like to take our team...
You're kidding me.
Hey, talk about college football.
No, I'm not kidding you. Can I finish what I'm saying before you start talking and looking at me like I'm a freak? Like a freak in nature?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, that's the one good thing you've said, Margaret, which...
Well, I don't appreciate that either. Vernon, I'm trying to learn about this topic from you people, and you're not being very helpful. I don't know a lot about football, but I do know children, all right? And I don't know about accordion... recitals per se, but I'm telling you, Graham Spanier was at one.
I don't care if Graham Spanier was at one. I've been to 3 accordion recitals in 2 years, and I'm a football coach. And then I've got to sit there and talk to the parents about their son playing accordion. And
why are you going to accordion recitals?
Because I'm expected to, because I have to look at the students not just as athletes, but as students. And if there's a kid that we are looking at, say there's a kid that we want to recruit for the team, or maybe the kid doesn't want to play, I want to go to the accordion, kid plays accordion. And I've had in the last 2 years, I've had 3 kids that play accordion that it would be damn good football prospects. Accordion. And I had to sit there and go, yeah, that's great, hey, all right. Sounds just like the monkey grinder. And I got into trouble, you know that, with the...
Yeah, well, I remember that you had a problem with the administration.
Yeah, that was when the monkey grinder controversy.
There wasn't any controversy. I said it sounded just like the monkey grinder in the movies, and that's when I got called up in front of the administrative board.
What he did was...
I'm sorry, what did you do?
I was listening to one of the kids play the accordion, and I said, sounds as good as the monkey grinder I've seen in those, you know, the monkey grinder movies.
What's a monkey grinder?
An organ grinder with a little monkey.
Oh, God.
Well, it wasn't that bad, you know.
Well, yeah, but Dave, it did make the local papers.
It made the papers?
Yeah, can you believe that? That's how little they have to write about Glendale. Nonetheless, that's where I've been, at accordion recitals. And so when I see a guy like Sandusky living it up, having a great time, you know, taking kids into the show, whatever he's doing. And
what do you mean a great time? This guy is a pervert ruining the lives of children.
I didn't mean a great time. I'm just saying from his perspective, he's living it up, you know.
Well, from his perspective, he's like the devil in hell. If the devil in hell is living it up, then yes, Jerry Sandusky was living it up.
All right, okay, fine, God. I'm just saying, you got to look at it from his perspective. I'm looking at it from my perspective as a football coach, and I'm looking at it from his perspective as a football coach. You understand what I'm saying, Phil? And so he's living it. He's.
Well, you're saying he thinks he's living it up.
Yeah, he's living it up. Look at him. He's got a nice retirement salary. He takes, something into the shower with him.
What do you mean something into the shower? You see what I'm saying? You understand what we're saying now, Vernon? This is, you can't treat this like it's about you.
I'm not saying it's about me. I'm just saying, compared to Sandusky, I got reamed. Sandusky got it all, and what did I get? I got an accordion recital. Why do you...
Will you get off the accordion recital? No one cares.
Oh, that much I know. I know that no one cares. Believe me, I know that no one cares. I can come home. I came home to my wife, doesn't care. My wife is sitting next to me right now, who I love. We've been married 6 years. She's 31 years younger than me. She's a wonderful woman. I love her, and she loves me. I don't know why I can't spit that word out. I know you love me, honey. But she's going, and she's 31 years younger than me. And when I say to her that I've been to 3 accordion recitals in the last 2 years as the football coach at Belmar Academy, she just shrugs and she goes back to the Cracker Jack box. And I'm being literal. The Cracker, is that what you're eating now? Okay, it's caramel corn. It's not Cracker Jack. Has it got the prize?
Who cares?
I'm trying to determine if it...
Vernon, no one cares. I think you're way off the mark here, and you're really not sticking to the point. The point here is this man is an animal, and what you're doing is comparing yourself to this man, as opposed to having compassion for the children.
I've got compassion for the children. I go to their accordion recitals. Go!
Okay, man, you're really wrapped a little. Let's go to a phone call here. 877-876-7445. Karen, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Vernon Dozier.
I am enjoying your program this evening. I'm really enjoying this.
Oh, God, this is that woman.
Margaret, hello, how are you? It's Karen Doville.
Yes, I know, dear.
All right. I want to talk to this man. Mr. Dozier?
Yes, ma'am.
This is Karen Doville. I'm in Baltimore, Maryland. How are you?
Yes, ma'am, I'm very good.
I have been listening to you. And my husband's been listening to you, and my brother-in-law, Jerry. Now, I understand what you're saying, okay. But my husband, Herb, and Jerry, I'm going to say, they are mad at you.
Why are they mad at me, ma'am?
Well, you know how guys are. Jerry, do you want to... Okay, hold on. This is my brother-in-law.
Hey, Coach, Jerry Doville here. Coach, you sound like you might come the same neck of the woods, do you?
I come from Texas. I come from Houston, Texas.
Well, I come from South Carolina, but you're a Southerner. You know we don't do well on that. You don't do right by people like that.
I understand that, sir. I'm not backing this guy up. I'm just telling you.
Well, you said it about Sandusky, and I understand you have a football team, too.
I'm a football coach, okay? And I'm not. All I'm saying is, how come Sandusky gets to live it up? And
live it up!
He's not living it up, Coach. He's not living it up. Those are little boys.
Right. Why do you call him? Why do you say?
In his mind, he's living it up. In his mind, he's got it good, you know? And he's got it good, and I would, but I don't have it good.
Well, you said you want to have a boy?
No, I didn't say I want to have a boy. I said,
look, you, if you had that job,
I wouldn't do what he's doing. If I was that sick and that demented, and thank God I'm not, but let's say I was, I sure as hell wouldn't bring him into the shower at school. For God's sake, I'd find a place tucked away.
What exactly is your view of Jerry Sandusky?
I thought I made myself clear.
I think you got perved up.
Phil, my brother Jerry, he thinks this man is perfect. And I have to say, Coach...
Yeah, ma'am, with all due respect, I don't give a damn what your what your hillbilly brother thinks.
Well, that's not nice. That's not nice at all. Phil, you have to get some nicer guests on your program. Otherwise, I don't think I can listen.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, you know we love you, Phil.
Ma'am, I don't care what your hillbilly cotton-picking brother says between bites on the corn cob, okay? And whether or not he can get that stuff out from his between his teeth is between him and the guy that makes the dental floss. It got nothing to do with me.
That is the rudest thing.
You are very rude.
Ma'am, I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just trying to lay it on you straight, okay?
Well, anything you lay on me, it won't be laid on me straight. Oh, I'm bad.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, Phil.
All right, Vernon, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Your statements are very self-serving, I think.
I apologize, but I'm trying to have you see this through the Vernon eye. And the Vernon point of view is simply, yes, there were children that were harmed, yes. But look at this guy Paterno, who's now off playing a harp. You know full well. You know full damn well that Paterno's in heaven. You know that, right?
I don't know.
Come on, Mr. Andrew, you know Paterno's in heaven. How are you going to send a guy like that to hell with all of the people that loved him, with all of the people that believed in him? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Why are you... What is the point of this?
I'm telling you, if you people will listen to me, Paterno is in heaven. Okay? You know he's in heaven. That's the injustice. Jerry Sandusky, he'll cook in hell, but I'll probably go to hell because I brought up the fact that I got reamed while Paterno goes to heaven. Jerry Sandusky goes to hell, but who cares? I'm here coaching at the high school level. I go to accordion recitals, and at the end of the day, God says, you know what? Yeah, the accordion recitals. Yeah, the winning football teams. But, man, you just don't get it done.
And he sends you to hell.
And I get sent to hell. And there's Paterno. As I am cooking in hell, I look up from my oil pot, whatever the hell they put you in down there, I don't know, and I'm not looking forward to it. And I look up, and there's Paterno with that crap-eaten grin on his face, talking to God about, hey, remember this game, remember that game? And God's all, yeah, tell me more, Joe. I mean, it makes me sick. It makes me sick. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, all about you.
Let me ask you something. If you're cooking in hell...
All right, hold on for a minute. We'll be right back talking about Vernon Dozier and how... You know, the worst part of this whole Jerry Sandusky thing is not so much what happened to the kids. It's the fact that Vernon didn't get the coach at Penn State. Joe Paterno's going to go to heaven now, according to him. He's going to hell with Sandusky. And he'll be looking up from his boiling pot of oil as Sandusky, or as Joe Paterno's talking about the big Penn State games with God. I don't know. We'll be right back to world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth
yes, he
is
know.
Our
God,
bitch.
God, you like it.
The Phil what Henry
you know
Show.
God likes football? What if God's a hockey fan?
I don't think God's a hockey fan. It's too violent.
World famous Phil Henry Show.
All I'm trying to say, you know.
All right, Vernon Dozier on the line with us as we discuss the Joe Paterno story, or excuse me, the Jerry Sandusky story. I don't think Joe Paterno belongs in the discussion, Vernon. I understand that you've got some resentment. There's a lot of people that have resentment toward Joe Paterno, and in my mind, and the way I look at it, he was an elderly man, and by that I mean he was a part of a generation that this whole thing with child abuse was dealt with behind closed doors. If it was dealt with at all, it was not dealt with honorably. It was all about hiding it, hushing it up, and never really dealing with the child. And I think Paterno was caught in that kind of a mindset.
Yeah, but you see, the thing, Phil, you're not dealing with is all right, where does that leave? Well, all right, I won't say me. Where does that leave us? It leaves us with Joe Paterno is still everybody, you know, thinks that, you know, when he sat down in the morning, all he crapped were gardenias. And
no, it doesn't leave us with that, because they took his statue down and they vacated those wins. And what do you think his name is like? I mean, when people talk about Joe Paterno today, until I don't know for how long, man, they ain't going to be talking about the great days of Penn State football. They're going to be talking about the end of his life and what a disaster that was and how he let people down.
Well, you know, I wish I could believe you, Phil.
You wish? So what... Where is the injustice that you're feeling here?
I feel that he's going to heaven. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Injustice has got nothing to do with me. He's just going, you know he's going to heaven, and you won't admit it. And
I don't understand this line. How do you know Joe Paterno's going to heaven, number one, and who cares?
How do I know? Because look at him. Look at the guy.
You know, if there's such a place as heaven... It doesn't belong in this world. It belongs in another. It's in another dimension, and it's judged. And the people that go there are judged on a completely different, in a different way. Probably the people that we think are squeaky clean are probably not going to go to heaven. Probably the people we think are the biggest douchebags, maybe they will.
Oh, so Sandusky's going to heaven? Is that it?
I didn't say that, but what I'm saying is, it's beyond human perception. How about that?
See, that is spoken like a true Catholic.
Okay, well, whatever. 877-876-7445. Let's go to another phone call. Dr. Jim Sadler on the line with us from San Diego. Dr. Sadler, how are you?
No, I'm very well. I'm having a great time listening to the conversation. Mr. Dozier, how are you?
I'm good, doctor. And you and I have spoken before, and I say this with great respect. I don't want to go. You know, I don't want to be fed into your little doctor, into your doctor grinder, you know, where you...
Well, what do you mean by that?
what I mean by that is that there's a... what do I mean by what? You know...
Well, what do you mean by my doctor, Grinder?
I mean that you feed people into your little... your head shrinker. And
why don't you let him just talk to you and not judge him?
I think that's... Phil, thank you. Vernon, here's what I wanted to ask you, because you had made a point that you felt that Jerry Sandusky was living it up and that you could... boy, what you could do, and you're stuck at the high school level. If you're unhappy with your lot in life, do you blame Joe... I'm not a football fan, so forgive me, Phil. Joe...
Paterno.
Paterno. I know Rick Pitino. Do you know Rick Pitino?
I know of Rick Pitino.
Yeah, he's a basketball coach.
All right, okay, that's not the same man.
Yeah, Rick Pitino's, like Phil said, basketball.
Okay, all right, let me scratch that out. Pertin. Okay, who's Pertin? Is there a Dick Pertin?
Dick Pertin was a radio personality in Detroit.
I don't know.
Okay, Dick Pertin. I got a lot of these names that start with P, and I want to learn more about them, you know. Here's one, Jimmy Pearsall. And
okay, Doc, did you want to...
I'm sorry.
Jimmy Pearsall, by the way, was a baseball player.
Baseball player that had schizophrenia, so that does kind of relate, because we're talking about athletes or people in the athletic field who needed to have their bell, you know, they have their clock wound, or something needed to get tightened up.
Jimmy Pearsall was what, Phil, did you say?
Jimmy Pearsall was a Major League Baseball player who also suffered from schizophrenia, I believe. And I remember him as a kid. He played for the Angels briefly.
Okay. He played for the Angels, and he was a schizophrenic.
But that's not...
What is that?
That's not related. That's the name of the team.
Yeah, the team was the Angels, and he played for the Senators.
Okay. But he was a schizophrenic.
Yes, but it had nothing to do with him playing.
Well, I don't know if they assigned you to teams because of...
No, Doc. No.
Oh, excuse me for breathing. Yeah.
Dr. Sadler, hi, this is Margaret Gray. Listen, join the club. Every time I ask a good question, I'm looked at as if I was hatched, that I didn't come out of a birth canal, that I instead struggled out of a shell. I struggled like a soggy bird or a soggy bird thing.
I know the feeling very much so.
Good Lord, what kind of a... what was that?
Yeah, I'm just now wrapping my mind around that one.
What was what?
You're looked at as if... nobody's looking at you in any way other than just the way we looked at you.
And what way is that?
Well, okay, we're out of time.
Did you say you're out of time? I called up. This happens an awful lot, Phil, when I call your show. And it hurts me. It hurts bad. And bad.
God, I got to hang up because he sounds like he's taking one.
Yeah. All right. Vernon, thank you. And Margaret, we'll have to discuss this on the other side.
What, the other side of death's door?
No, the other side of the news, okay? Because we're going to a break. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
The other side of the news.
Yeah, we're going to go to a news break. Don't you hear too good?
Watch it. Watch it.
Wow.
Phil Hendry.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here at the El Pacifico. And see that, bud?
Yeah, that's the Pacifico right there.
What is that?
That's the ocean right behind us. It's actually a very calm evening out there, but you see, that's the oil platform.
Oh, that's the lit-up thing.
Yeah, which you can see prominently from our studios here at... the El Pacifico, that's an oil platform between here and the Channel Islands. You know, I saw a story on TV here this past weekend that shocked me. Though I never knew the man, I felt I had a connection to him. And I'll tell you a little bit about it. For those of you who are from the city of Denver, you probably remember a morning show, Stephen B. and the Hawk. It was a morning show on radio in Denver that was perhaps one of the prototypes in the Denver market and perhaps in the country of the or maybe one of the perfectors of the morning zoo type of approach, which was a sort of a gonzo approach to rock and roll morning radio, a little bit of talk radio mixed in with a lot of comedy and music. Now, Stephen B., I heard about not only professionally, but also when I was out there in the world, you know, making, you know, my way up the ladder. I'd come home here to California, and he, apparently Stephen B., was also a Californian. And my mother said to me one day, she says, have you ever heard...
Your mother sounds like Karen.
Yeah, my mother was a little bit like Karen. She says, have you ever heard Stephen B.? And I said, no, Mom, I haven't. I think I know the name. She says, well, you know that the lady that I help at the store, because my mother worked at the May Company or one of the department stores in Newport Beach.
Yeah, we're on the Fashion Island.
Exactly. At Fashion Island there, they had a lot of the different stores. My mother had a little job there. She liked doing her job. She enjoyed it. So I think it was a Nordstrom, something like that. In any event, she says, well, you know, one of my customers is this lady so-and-so, and she's her son is Stephen B. I said, oh, wow, really? And he's in Denver, yes, uh-huh. I said, oh, that's kind of cool. And I really did. I wasn't just humoring my mother. I thought it was kind of cool because there was this sort of little, you know, it was a little, the radio community is indeed a small one, and it's one thing when you know other people in the business. But it's also kind of interesting when you hear about them through family members. You know, oh, I met this guy who's on this station. Now I'm watching this thing. You saw it with me, bud, this thing on Investigation Discovery, huh?
You guys live on Investigation Discovery, my God.
There's a lot of stuff you learn on it. Yeah, you should watch it, and you learn about stuff.
What do I have to learn from that?
Well, it's crime. It's true crime stuff. And lo and behold... Lo and behold, I'm seeing this story, and they found a man floating off of Catalina Island in the water, and this was Stephen B.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What happened?
Well, the poor man was murdered. He was murdered, and he was murdered, and I'm trying to get the time frame. Maybe one of you guys, Bud, while you're sitting there with your plate, you know.
If he doesn't stop it with the fingers up the nose.
I'm going to go online and look at it, but yet.
What is it with you? Blow your no-woes, okay?
See this, Bud? This is a piece of paper. Tissue looks like this.
Here, let me have it.
Oh, God, he blew his nose. That's part of my tax. I'll kill it.
No. Bud, get out of here.
All I'm trying to do is...
You blew your nose on her tax return. What did you get your tax return out for?
Frank wanted me to read something back to him. He was on the phone. So this poor man...
Yes, yes. And I said, geez, that's the guy. I said, that's the guy that my mom was talking about. She knew the poor mother. And as it turned out, Stephen B. was very close to his parents. His father was very ill, and his father did eventually pass on. Here in, I believe, the Long Beach, San Pedro, Palos Verdes area of Los Angeles... And he inherited his father's estate, which was in the neighborhood of about $2 million. So he had a nice family inheritance there. And he was not a guy, and I got to hand it to this man, Stephen B. He didn't want to get back on the radio. He didn't have a driving passion to do that. He wanted to sail.
As in sailboats.
Yes, he wanted to sail, and he wanted to sail around the world. That was one of his dreams, and he had this money, and he didn't know. I think they said, well, was he going to maybe buy a boat? No, you know, he didn't quite know. Now he meets a guy.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he meets a guy up in L.A., and this chap is introduced to him as a very well-to-do businessman who has just purchased this boat. He wants to refit this sailboat, and they want to do around the world a cruise. And would you be interested, Stephen B? He says, well, as a matter of fact, I would. You know, I'm. And here's the other thing. Stephen B was a chef. He was very much into cooking. His friends said that he was a terrific cook, and he would often have dinners, and he cooked for them. And he said, so this man with the boat that needed refitting, he says, I tell you what, I could use a cook, and you can work your way on this cruise you can work your way around the world on the cruise working for me. And apparently this sounded good to this Stephen B. gentleman. Stephen B. Williams is his name. So he began working for this guy.
I think I know this story.
Don't tell me. It's good. I want to get the surprise.
Well, hold on, bud. Did you blow your nose?
Yeah.
So this poor man starts working for this multimillionaire supposed guy on his boat. He's a cook. He's also doing much of the repair. He's doing a lot of the finishing. He's doing a lot of the engine repair. He's doing a lot of the work, you know. It's the classic Tom Sawyer, you know, paint the fence thing, or Huckleberry Finn, whatever that book was. I forget which.
I think it was a combination of the two.
Yeah, was it Huckleberry? Probably Tom Huckle. The Huckleberry Sawyer, if you wanted to combine it to.
Yeah, that's real good, bud.
Never mind, bud. So any Huckleberry Sawyer. So anyway, the this man is doing all this repair. And he now finds that he doesn't have any money. His friends ask him, because they're going out to lunch with him, and he's saying, well, can you pick up the check? I don't have any money. And they say, well, why? He says, well, you know, he'd been floating checks to this guy to the tune of $2 million, and it just so happens that it costs $2 million to fix this boat. So this guy had been writing checks to this guy to help repair this boat. And this dude, this millionaire, he didn't have a nickel. He was just a con man who had conned this Stephen B. out of his money. So the day came that Stephen says to his friends, I'm going to tell this guy I want my money back. Well, you know how this one ends. And God bless the poor man and rest his soul. It always seems in these stories that they say, I'm going to get my money back. And when do they want to go get their money? When they're alone on a boat with the guy somewhere, or it's at night, or it's in the guy's office and he doesn't have any friends. You know, it seems like the most vulnerable time. And sure enough, he's on the guy's boat. And I guess they're going between Catalina they're going around the Catalina Island, which is an island, those of you not familiar, it's an island off the coast of California near L.A. So they're going around the island, and this guy comes up, the police theorize, behind Mr. Williams and pops him and pushes his body overboard. He's obviously, he's dead, and he's in the water. Now, the whole reason why they caught onto this trial is because the body of this man, this unidentified man, was found. But no one had really reported him missing, or if they had, I think they hadn't connected the two, you know?
I think that's what it was. His friends had reported him missing, but also they found this body, but they didn't know that the two were related.
Right, so make a long story short, this guy that killed him goes on the lam when he finds out that the police were at his boat. You know, this guy, he's got this boat. Some of these people are so stupid, you wonder, how the hell did they ever make it past the age of 10? You know, he's walking down to his boat. He sees cops are crawling all over his boat. So he turns and he splits, gets into his car. He's gone, man. They're able to track his cell phone as far as Arizona. Then it goes dead. Next thing you know, the guy turns up in Montana. He fits the description of a guy that's wanted by the police. The guy is going, he gets employed as a car salesman at a used car lot, but the guy that employs him recognizes him immediately, calls the cops, and this dude is arrested for murder. And when they finally take him in for his questioning, they say, do you know Stephen B. Williams? He goes, yeah, he was my cook. That's all he knows. He left, and I haven't seen him since. Yeah, well, guess what, man? Yes, you have.
So this poor man was murdered for his money.
He was murdered for his money. His father's $2 million inheritance was gone. And, you can discuss whether he was smart, whether he wasn't. He got conned. He got conned out of, and how many times does that happen? He got conned out of his money, and he gave it to this guy thinking that this money that he was giving to this guy in order to fix this man's boat would be returned to him somehow. I don't know what he was thinking, but he finally was convinced by his friends, you got to get your money back. Because this guy has taken every dime you have, and you're broke, and, you know, what's this about? And sure enough, the day he went to get his money back, he was killed.
And this was on this Investigation Discovery?
Yes. I'm telling you, it's the greatest channel. I love it. I can watch it all weekend. It's fantastic.
Would you watch it instead of listening to your podcast?
No, I would not.
Yeah, you're...
No, because I laugh when I listen to our podcast, and I don't laugh. So when I need laughs, I listen to our podcast. When I don't need laughs, I watch this. All right. We'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Henry Show with other news. Mitt Romney's so-called hostile takeover of the debate, yeah, right, will be discussed. And the Mexican Navy says it may have killed a wanted drug lord, yeah, right. And Jerry Sandusky proclaims his innocence ahead of sentencing, yeah, right. All of that and more on a world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Truth yeah, right. is yeah, our right. bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, right.
Do what?
Do what I'm saying. You got murdered.
If I got murdered, what?
You'd be a legend.
That, all we're saying, Phil, is it's automatic legend status.
Oh, well, then why don't I just go out and get murdered and I know I'm an automatic legend? God.
Well, don't start stumbling, man. You're all nervous. Going blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you all sound nervous and everything.
Phil, we're not saying go out and get murdered, but we're saying that it would be...
It'd be nice, huh?
I didn't say it'd be nice. It would... You would ensure your legacy that way.
Yeah, people always say, yeah, Phil Henry, you got murdered.
Oh, well, that's just fantastic. Are you guys nuts or something? I'm going to go out and get murdered and ensure my legacy. What's that going to mean to me? And what's that going to mean to my family? Somebody pay my family because I was murdered?
Well, but I mean, they'll want to make a movie or something out of your life.
Oh, well, that's how I get it done. Jeez, why didn't I think of it? Hey, what happened to the TVs?
I don't know. It looks like the cable went out.
The cable went out. All of a sudden, the cable went out on my TV. Thank you, Time Warner. The boxes still work, and it looks to me like everything is still functioning. World at War and the new detectives. One moment should be available shortly. I'll tell you, Time Warner, every time they do that, and you know what this is? It's midnight, isn't it? Yep, they always do their bullcrap at midnight.
What do you mean, bullcrap?
They always are out there fooling around with the lines or doing this or doing that. You know, some of us use your service. I got to get over there, man, and talk to them. And the other thing, by the way, Bank of America, and I'm saying this publicly, I'm saying it on the air, and I don't give a damn who knows it. You know, I'm so sick and tired of going into your branch and asking you to get me off of that paperless. I don't give a sweet Jesus about paperless statements. You understand? I want paper. My accountant needs it. We like it, okay? I want it mailed to me. I don't want paperless.
Well, what's the big deal?
I went in last month to this place, and I said, can you guys get me off of this paperless? I'd like paper statements mailed to me, please. Oh, yes, sir, Mr. Henry, no problem. It's been over a month. Something simple like that. Why can't they do that?
Well, Bobby, you didn't ask them. Maybe they got confused.
What's confusing about it, man? Do you realize that when I went into B of A, and I said to them, I'd like paper statements, I found out that in adding one of my accounts wasn't added to the online banking. I don't know how they do what they do, but they had butchered it so bad that they had all of my accounts under my retirement portfolio, and it was going to mean a big, big change in taxes, and these dumbasses had done this for whatever reason, I don't know. And I said, well, wait a second. It was caught by the, I would like to say it was caught by the personal banker, and it was, however, and I'd like to give him credit. However, he's the same dumbass that wasn't able to get me off of the paperless statements. So.
Well, Phil, you are calling out Bank of America publicly. How do you feel about that?
Let me tell you how I feel about that, okay? Would you like to know how I feel about that?
Well, let me guess.
No, you can't guess. You can't guess, because I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, how unfair, and you have the bully pulpit, and you're calling... Bank of America is a multi... Don't give me this thing about how I have the bully pulpit. If Bank of America could buy and sell me, the company that syndicates my radio show, and probably all the radio stations I'm on, five times over, okay? Bank of America is the beneficiary of billions of dollars of taxpayer money. Bank of America has billions of dollars of assets. Bank of America is Bank of America. They're badass. They're the bad boy on the block. Don't give me this thing about how I've got the bully pulpit. B of A, and the one little thing I'm calling them out on. Am I saying that, well, let's say they floated loans to third world dictatorships in the 80s?
Which they did.
No, I'm not saying that. Am I indeed bringing up the billions of dollars they took from the taxpayers after the, the toxic asset meltdown of the great 2008 kibibble? No, I am not.
What's a kibibble?
Never mind. Am I bringing up any of that stuff? No, I am not. What am I bringing up? The fact they can't get me back on paper statements. That's all. That's all.
Well, I just think it's not fair.
Oh, well, poor B of A. Oh, God, I'm just, my heart's breaking for him. Imagine, they got to go home tonight and they got to face their wife and kids when they heard Phil Henry saying that they can't get him on Baby Damon.
Why do you have to be cynical, Phil? I just think that there's an awful lot of this on the radio and on television where people like you use your position to badmouth...
To badmouth these companies? So what? It's not like I'm calling out some ma-and-pa bank at the corner. I'm not talking about some guy that's got a corner fruit stand. I'm not talking about a guy that's got a little tiny grocery store or a little tiny insurance. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about some guy that's struggling to keep his business afloat, and along comes Phil Henry and puts out the bad word. I don't like that any more than you do. I don't like guys that do that. I'm talking about Bank of America. I couldn't put him out of business if I tried in 100 years. But I'll tell you what, this is all that is left to me in life when a place like B of A causes this kind of inconvenience. Because look at, man, I got to get out of bed. I work late. I get up late. But I got to get out of bed early because my accountant needs these statements. So I got to get my ass to the Westlake Village branch, which is a 45-minute drive, walk in, explain it all over again to this guy, listen to their excuses again, which is, well, you know, we don't really do that, sir, and this and that, and then have a guy say to me, hey, Mr. Henry, I'm your personal banker. I can get this done. Oh, okay, that sounds great. Sure, no problem. Have a seat. I'll hear that all over again because that's what I heard the first time. Then another bank officer will come in and they'll talk to me and shoot the crap and, hey, how you been and what you doing? And, oh, are those, is that a seersucker suit you're wearing? That's fantastic. I hear it's wash and wear. I'm just joking, but I've always wanted to own one anyway.
Yeah, I'm going to seersucker suit be bitching.
You know you can get some good seersuckers now at the seersuckers they have over at...
Oh, never mind. I'm not interested in the seersucker. Anyway.
About a Florsheim shoe.
What about a Florsheim shoe?
I'm going to look good by the seersucker.
Yeah, well, great. I'll keep it in mind. Wow. Anyway,
no, it wouldn't, by the way.
Okay, that's great. I don't want to talk about seersucker suits or Florsheim shoes. I'm talking about B of A. So anyway, so I'm going to sit there and have that guy come in and blah, 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 blah. And then the next thing you know, they're going to say, everything's great. It's all cool, Mr. Henry. You'll be getting your paper stamp, and it's going to be another month. Now, who am I? And you see, here's what happens. If you walk in there and you say anything that even hints of displeasure, even hints of displeasure, then they begin to size up, is he worth it or is he not? Does he have enough money with us or does he not? If he has enough money with us, I'm assuming they gave me a personal banker because I have enough money, but maybe I don't have enough money.
Not enough money to give them that kind of trouble.
Right. So I've got enough money, but do I have enough money where they're going to take my crap? And that's when I have to have my ace in the hole, which is basically this. Fine, you know, I've been wanting to take my money over to Wells Fargo.
Oh, God, you wouldn't do that, would you?
What's wrong with Wells Fargo?
Well, there's nothing wrong with Wells Fargo, but would you actually drop that in their laps?
No. No, I'm not going to sit there and go, you don't get this done, I go to Wells Fargo. But I've been thinking about it anyway, man. I'm getting sick and tired of Bank of America. I'm getting sick and tired of them. I'm not kidding. I'm getting sick and tired of the hoops I got to jump through. I tried to open up a merchant account. What is it, time to,
Yeah, it's time to take another break. You're running your mouth.
That's what I'm supposed to run my mouth. That's what I'm supposed to do.
You were running your mouth a little longer.
We'll be right back. I've been running my mouth. We'll be back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show with another interesting anecdote about murder that we saw on television, me and Bud, this past weekend while we were sharing a box of Bugles. We'll be right back.
Phil Henry. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
You know, one of the things that I've learned over the past several years is, you know, it is very, very true, you know, when people tell you all the things they're going to do for you, right? And you come to, if you come to trust those kinds of things. And when I look at the story of this poor man, Stephen B., And I say, boy, how could you let yourself get suckered? You know, in small ways every day, we're all getting suckered. And I'm not talking about politicians. Forget about that. Just get off that kick for about 5 seconds. You know, one of the things that we do is as a fallback, we just, well, you see, my life sucks because of Obama or Bush, or, you know, and that's always a very convenient out. But fact is, we let ourselves get suckered in small ways every day, or in big ways, you know. Now, here I am screaming and yelling about my life. At least I ain't flying a plane into a building, you know.
Well, yes, like that man Stacked.
Joe Stacked?
Yes.
Right. At least I've never contemplated, nor would I ever contemplate, getting into an aircraft and flying it into a building. Unless, of course, that building had attached to it a big runway, then it would be flying it onto the runway.
Yeah, it wouldn't be on a building.
Right. But the fact of the matter is, here's what you find out. You find out in life that you really have to approach everything with a lot of patience. A lot of patience. Patience, when they say it's a virtue, they're not kidding. And if I've learned anything, I've learned two things: humility and patience. And I say that knowing full well, people who are backstage pass members, they see me during the breaks. They see me off the air before the show starts. They see me screaming and yelling and ranting and raving. I'm going to tell you, I've come a long way. Even though I scream and yell and rant and rave, I've come a long way, baby. Remember that commercial, Margaret?
Yes, you've come a long way, baby, to get where you've got to.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm not done yet.
Is this the whole...
Yes, bud.
Well, yeah, but I know...
I'm not done yet. I know the song. It goes this. You've come a long way, baby, to get where you've got to today. You've got your own cigarette now, baby. Woo, you come along. You know that one?
Yeah, I know it.
Bud was interrupting me.
What was that?
It's a commercial for a cigarette. That was what they called Lady Equality?
No, they didn't call it Lady Equality. They called it Women's Equality.
But they call it Equal Rights. And I don't know. No, they didn't call that. It was a commercial that was capitalizing on the whole Equal Rights thing. You know, you've come a long way, baby. Well, I've come a long way, baby. Boy, was that was a long way to run just to get that out.
But that song...
No, it goes like, you've come a long way, baby. Oh, to get where you got...
Didn't go, oh.
Well, you know how it went.
Right. In any event,
Phil, why do you look as if someone's punched you in the gut? You had a very good point to make, and now you sit there, a defeated man.
You just took all the wind out of my sails with that. You've come a long way, baby. Oh!
Oh, I didn't do that.
Yeah, you did. You went and come a long way, baby. Oh! Yeah, you pretty much did, Ms. Gray.
Well, if I did, so what?
Okay. Anyway, and what you do in life, when you got somebody who's dead from the neck up, when you got some low life, whatever's happening, you got lawyers. And in the last 6 years, I've found out just how... Here are the things I've found out in the last 6 years. I have found out just how ineffective lawyers are. I have found out just how ineffective people that you have working for you doing sales. I've found out just how ineffective and full of excuses all kinds of people are. You know? And especially attorneys. Now, I've got nothing against attorneys. I'm not one of these guys that doesn't like lawyers. I like lawyers. I like them a lot, and I need them, and thank God for them. Let me tell you what. And if you don't like lawyers, get another lawyer, okay? I don't know what to tell you, man, because, you know, lawyers can be very good for you. But you got to know what they're able to do and what they're not able to do. And what you got to do is you got to just, if they're frustrating you, if anybody is frustrating you in life, you just got to back off and go your own way, man, just like the song says, you know. Oh, here we go.
What? You got to, that's the song, though. You were.
Go your own way, yeah.
You can go your own way.
All right, God.
That's the song.
Yeah, but who did that? Fleetwood Mac? Yeah, that's the Fleetwood Mac band.
Great. So, having said all of that, I don't know what the hell else I was trying to say. Let's move on, okay, before I start throwing up. All right, so, in the world of politics...
Well, what was your essential point, though?
My essential point on what?
You were talking about you found how ineffective
No, it's just that, you know, people will see me screaming and yelling and ranting and raving off the air, and people don't know what I'm, you know, going through behind the scenes, but I have. I've gained a lot of patience, and I really have in the last few years, and because I just know there's some things that you can't make happen any faster than they're going to happen. And I think that's the difference between me and a guy that flies a plane into a building or a guy that, you know, loses it. I understand that there is a certain rhythm to life, that if you just back off and you have a little bit of patience, things are going to turn in your direction. And if they don't, there is a better place for them. There's a better place for you to be. There is just not necessarily what you want is the best thing, you know. And I've been thinking about that a lot, man. I've been thinking about how, you know, that's been one of the things.
This is the Phil Henry Spiritual Hour.
Yeah, don't stop. Father Phil, man.
Yeah, let's do Father Phil.
What do you mean Father Phil?
Sounds like you're doing a sermon and everything.
I'm talking about my life, you know. That's all I'm doing. Father Phil. All right, Jets give themselves a chance, if not a victory. The New York Jets tonight, we already heard from Joe Dickhead. The Jets lost. Despite a depleted roster, a maligned defense, and a quarterback situation that seemed more and more unsustainable by the day, here the Jets were, late fourth quarter, trailing undefeated Houston by 6 points, the football in their possession. Precisely how they arrived at that moment was somewhat of a mystery, especially to the fans who for a good portion of Monday night made MetLife Stadium sound as cold and unforgiving as Radio City Music Hall after an unpopular draft selection. Indeed, when Mark Sanchez was shown on a video screen after being selected by the team in 2009, the crowd booed. However, the Jets' methodology for a victory that would fall somewhere between astonishing and are you serious could be dissected later, for they had opportunity, which is all they ever wanted, all they ever expected of themselves. When Sanchez's pass deflected off of Jeff Cumberland's hands high into the air, there was little doubt what would happen next. Kareem Jackson of the Texans snatched the ball, his interception sealing a 23-17 loss for the Jets. The national television audience that tuned in might have done so out of curiosity, eager to gauge the Texans' talent to see Tim Tebow unleashed, maybe, just maybe, to witness a potentially historic margin of victory. That last desire was not without merit, not with Houston outscoring its first four opponents by 70 points, and the Jets, well, they were outscored by 34 just last week.
So they lost.
Yes, the Jets lost. This is an article in the New York Times. I thought I'd read it because it goes to the heart of just how popular the Jets are and how much people, you know, how much people just lose their guts over the Jets. They lost on Monday night. And the New York Jets, truth be told, haven't even sniffed a Super Bowl. Well, the closest they came was with Bill Parcells back in the late 90s. I think they played Denver for the AFC Championship. And I remember that game because I remember it's kind of like the last of the old school AFL-AFC championship matchups that I can remember.
What do you mean?
Well, that's the last of those old teams?
Yeah, when the Jets and Broncos played, I remember thinking, wow, this is kind of like watching one of the old AFC games and one of the old AFL games. These are actually two of the charter members of the AFL, and they're playing for the championship, and it had been so long, you know. I mean, we're seeing like the New Englands against the Pittsburghs, the whatever. But the Jets have not come close since then, and they haven't been in a Super Bowl since the one that Joe Willie Namath. And I mean, that's the New York Jets. The only thing they got, man, the only thing they got is Joe Namath.
Well, I mean, they what about like the sack exchange?
Who cares about the sack exchange?
What's that?
The sack exchange was, what's his name, Joe Klecko and Mark Gastineau. The guy that used to jump up and down. Big deal. Who cares about them?
Yeah, but they were good.
So what if they were good, man? We're talking about winning a Super Bowl. The last one the Jets had was Joe Namath, man, and he's almost in his 70s, if he's not already in his 70s. I mean, that's the last time the Jets had that kind of glory, man, back when they were wearing weird-looking helmets and, you know. So it's a football team that frustrates the living hell out of their fans, and then they go for Tebow. I'm telling you right now, there's something wrong mentally upstairs with the New York Jets, the brain trust. I mean, I don't understand the whole Tebow move. I don't.
No, well, you kidding me? I mean, Tebow makes it happen on the field and everything.
I'll tell you what's wrong with that team, and I don't give a damn what anybody says. I don't think they got a good coach. I just don't. They don't have a good coach, and they certainly can't coach quarterbacks on that team to save their ass. Mark Sanchez is a good quarterback, but I think that kid is playing. I can't even imagine playing with Buddy Ryan breathing down, or what's the guy's name? Rex Ryan breathing down your neck.
Is that the man that was sniffing his wife's feet?
Yeah, that's what he's doing.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, he was.
No, he was. What do you mean sniffing his wife's feet? He was talking to her about her feet, wasn't he?
No, he sniffed her feet.
Are you kidding? He sniffed his wife's feet where?
On some video.
Well, what does that tell you?
It doesn't tell me anything about coaching football.
What's that got to do with coach football? Yeah, but it does mean that there's a perversion. And would you want to be coached by him on a perversion?
What do you mean a perversion, bud? What does that mean?
Yeah. I mean, if you're on a, if you have him as a coach on a team, and let's say...
Get your fingers out of your nose, man.
Sorry. If he's a coach on a team, okay? Okay, Mr. Henry?
Yes. Okay.
All right. And don't you think if you're a player that it'd be kind of weird... I'm sorry. That it'd be weird to have him...
What are you talking about, man? Are you saying that there's some undue pressure on the team because he sniffs his wife's feet?
I would think it would be a distraction, yes.
A distraction to who? If you keep it... Look, I remember when that whole thing went down. They didn't even bring it up. The Jets management didn't bring it up. Ryan didn't bring it up. The players didn't talk about it. It died as fast as it came around. I mean, nobody... You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't. I think that it's something that's a distraction. In much the same way that the when Brett Favre had sent a picture of his genitalia, or I forget what was it?
Yeah, it was a picture of his genitalia.
When he sent that picture to that woman, that's a distraction, because you're going out onto the. And I don't know football, Phil, so please forgive me if I'm misspeaking, but when you go out onto the football field, and you're thinking the man that is going to throw the ball to me showed his penis to a woman that he didn't know. And I would think it would cause you not to want to catch the ball. That's...
Yeah, that makes sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense to me, Robert.
Well...
Oh, come on. Are you kidding me?
Well, I don't know.
I'm telling you right now, are you... I'm in a football game and a guy throws the... Oh, boy, I don't know about catching this ball.
That's the last time you laugh at me.
Margaret, you know, I let you get your whole... Oh, look at her. She's walking away.
I'm going to the toilet.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the toilet. Yeah.
Oh, what? It's a nightly occurrence?
Yes, it is a nightly occurrence. Man, let's take a break.
You spit all over everything.
Sorry, folks. I spit up. I didn't spit up, but I spit. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Let's take a phone call here. RC in Altadena. RC, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Mr. Hendry, and I've been listening to your program tonight and enjoying it very, very much. And everybody at Bradley Military Academy has sent a big, you know, hoorah to the Phil Hendry Show.
Thank you.
I wanted to follow up, Mr. Hendry, on the comment that you had made about Mark Sanchez of the New York Jets, and I agree with you. I think that if he were, I mean, you got to be kidding me. If he was with a coach like a Bill Belichick or a Don Landry, or I mean Tom Landry. Tom Landry. I think Mark Sanchez would be a way better player.
That's a good point. I think that there's no question about that.
What about who?
What
coach you talking about?
I've talked about Don Landry.
Tom Landry.
Tom Landry on the Dallas Cowboys, he's dead.
I know he's dead, but I'm saying that if he was alive, I think that he was, better at coach at quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think the point is that there's coaches that are very, very good at working with quarterbacks. They give them confidence. They give them confidence by giving them the tools they know they need when they go out on the field. They feel they have a command of the field. There's a level of support they're getting. They're not sent out there with a pressure of it seems to me that Sanchez is sent out there week after week with, you know, you got to get it done or you're going to lose your job. Look at bringing Tebow in. What does that tell you, man? I mean, last year I had this sense that Sanchez was playing with a lot of pressure, and when they made the deal to bring Tebow in.
Well, I think Tim Tebow may be a different case. That Tim Tebow is the guy that you want to bring in who will be like a dual, in my opinion, that was like a dual quarterback thing.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. Like, you can use Sanchez to throw the ball and then have Tebow to hurdle in.
Yeah, we were talking about that. And
what are we talking about? What?
Well, you can have Sanchez. He's passing the ball, and then when the ball gets down to the goal line, then you bring in Tebow, and he hurdles in. You know?
What do you mean hurdles in?
Well, he leaps in.
Yeah, and then Tebow comes in and he just leaps in.
What do you mean a dual? Boy, that's cornball.
Why is that?
Well, it just sounds corny. Dual quarterbacks. I mean, so in other words, you've got quarterbacks that are going to be playing, you know, splitting playing time?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, there's teams that have done that.
Well, they've done it maybe game to game, but they've never done it in a game. I don't know of any professional team. I can tell you that I don't know. Maybe there are, and maybe there have been, but I can't think of any professional team that I've ever seen that split the playing time in a game as a regular feature of their offense between, you know, two quarterbacks.
Well, what do you think about that?
What do you think about if they had Sanchez comes in and then they go, okay, now let's bring in Tebow and he'll run it. Okay, now bring Sanchez back in. And it keeps the defense from being aware of it. Or, I mean, being on top of it.
I think it's squirrely.
What do you mean squirrely?
I think it's just squirrely. I don't think there's a defense in the National Football League that wouldn't be able to handle that. I think that's not going to blow anybody's mind. I think the defenses up and down the line in the NFL will be able to handle that, just like they were able to handle Tebow in Denver last year. Tebow wasn't no big thing. I said that, and oh, my God.
What did you think about Tebow?
I thought Tebow was a fine young man, and he's not a half-bad quarterback, but he ain't going to win any Super Bowls. He's a scrambling quarterback, and by that I mean he's a scrambling quarterback who does not have the greatest arm in the world. And those quarterbacks don't win Super Bowls. They never have won Super Bowls. And as far as I know, they never will win Super Bowls. And when I said that on Facebook last season, oh, my God, you would have thought that I had just committed a mortal sin.
But you got to give Tebow a lot of people like him.
Yeah. The other thing, Mr. Henry, that you're not taking into consideration is he is a Christian. So, you know.
Well, what's that got to do with anything?
Where's Margaret, by the way?
What?
Well, I think, Mr. Henry.
Hold on. What?
Where's Margaret?
Margaret, go find. And don't pound on the door, okay?
Thanks.
Go ahead.
Well, the thing that I was going to say, Mr. Henry, it's just...
Hold on.
Miss Gray! Okay,
but I said don't...
Hey, are you listening to me, Mr. Henry?
Hold on, will you? But don't do that.
Margaret!
Don't do that.
Hey, Baldy.
Hey, Baldy, huh? Punk?
Right, but still wants you.
Don't bother her if she's still in the can.
My God, can't I sit and have a bowel movement?
Every single night, this woman's got to make a major announcement that she's having a bowel movement.
Yeah, well, I asked about that. She said just in case. Like she said, that's why. Because if she has a heart attack in there, you need to know where she is.
If she has a heart attack, I understand people saying, I'm going to the bathroom. I get that. Because you're right. If they have a heart attack, I guess we need to know where they are. But do you need to tell me you're going to the bathroom to take a...
A dump?
The world-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Henry. I want to remind you, our website is philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. And you can get a backstage pass that affords you over 4,500 hours, full radio shows of the world-famous Phil Henry Show, going back more than a decade, cutting-edge satire, cutting-edge comedy. It's bitching, man. And also, of course, we have our videocast archive, and we have our Milwaukee Lion archive, and we just got it going on there at philhenryshow.com. And dropping tomorrow is episode 47 of the world-famous Phil Henry Show, Free Phil Henry Show podcast. That's episode 47 dropping tomorrow. And you can find that at our website as well as iTunes and other places like that. All right, guys, until tonight at 10, let that be a lesson to you. Thanks. See ya.
See ya, buddy.
Phil Henry.